ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there. My name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. The Australian Trucking Association wants all states and territories to follow what South Australia has just done, and that is tightening up the licensing requirements of overseas truck drivers.
There are drivers coming with international licences into Australia and quickly moving to MC licensing, and they don't have the skill, the capability or the experience to be driving these longer vehicle units, particularly within the Australian road conditions.
Yeah, does the Northern Territory need to follow South Australia's lead on this? We'll talk about this in a moment. Also this afternoon, a look at what the AFL is doing to help farmers. And before 1:30 this afternoon, a chat to the NT Livestock Exporters Association about the Territory's biggest year of cattle exports in a decade. This is all coming up on a very busy Country Hour. We're broadcasting right across the Territory on the ABC. We're streaming online, and g'day if you've tuned in via the podcast. First up today, let's talk about a live export story that's a little bit different. Indonesia's largest dairy company has just imported 1,100 head of dairy cattle from Victoria as it looks to expand its herd and boost the nation's milk production. To learn more about this shipment, I had a chat to Dick Slaney, who is the General Manager of Farms for Greenfields Indonesia. He says the cattle are now out of the quarantine yards and it's been an important milestone.
Yeah, mate, we've broken a few bit of the mould here. The Indonesian government has allowed us to import for the very first time a Holstein Jersey cross. You know, us dairy cow fellas up here, we've always known that the crossbreed would be a better breed for the local farmers. They're more heat tolerant, they're easier to breed, they're cheaper to feed, and there's a few, you know, they're just a tougher dairy animal for a small farmer, and particularly cattle are a little bit lower in altitude, i.e. they're going to need to have a bit more heat tolerance. So the Jersey Holstein cross is a really good option, and for the first time the Indonesian government's given us a permit to import those. It's not carte blanche, however, for future imports. This is a trial, so to speak. Mm. So the Indonesian government is viewing it like that. We'll probably have to share quite a bit of information as to how those efforts go. But there does seem to be quite a lot of interest from other farmers and bigger farmers also as to what they will do in the future. So the importation of crossbreeds is really our first. And, you know, Greenfields was the first to import Jersey cattle as well a number of years ago. And so we're continuing that trend to stay ahead of the game and as to what's good for us and what's good for the local farms as well. Yeah.
You say it's a trial, but it's fairly significant, I would say, in terms of numbers, 1,100 head. Can you tell us their journey to get to Indonesia?
Yeah, well, we were down there with one of my Indonesian colleagues. We were down there in, crikey, when was that? Early June, I guess. We were down there in the Western District of Victoria, up to the northern part, up on the Murray there, buying these little girls from local farmers, and by crikey, it was a dry setup down there. By gee, the situation was dry and bloody awful, quite honestly. So they were exported out of Portland, came across the Bight and around Cape Leeuwin and up to Java, and there was another shipment on board the boat, so they were unloaded in Banyuwangi, the little port opposite Bali, first, and then came on to us to a little town called Probolinggo on the still in East Java, so we unloaded there for the first time, and so it's a new quarantine. We've borrowed an old feedlot from Suntory. A lot of your listeners will know Suntory. They used to be a very big importer. And they've got an old feedlot here that we've used for the quarantine. So this importation's actually been in collaboration with JAPFA, who owns Suntory. And JAPFA is actually a shareholder of Greenfield. So it's very much an internal collaboration between our different resources. We've needed Suntory a great deal to get this through, so it's been a good exercise across both companies to make that happen.
And how are they settling in to their new home?
Well, they're not home yet. We're at the end of the quarantine period today, Saturday. 14 days is up, so we're waiting for the go to for quarantine to let us go with the heifers. They'll be distributed majority to about four or five big farmers that are sort of going to milk around between 100 to 400 of these heifers when they calve. And there's about 50 of them will go to small farmers, and the rest will basically go to some bigger co-ops that, where they're holding sort of 30 or 40 or 50 head. So our work is really just beginning. Of course, our ulterior motive of Greenfields is, of course, is to collect the milk from these farmers, and so we'll be supporting them all the way through the journey. We'll be there to make sure they feed the cattle properly and do what they can to be successful themselves. And then, of course, our own success is on the milk output of these heifers itself. You know, after foot and mouth disease went through the cattle, particularly the dairy herd in East Java, we lost something like 40% of the dairy heifers, I think I told you that in a previous interview.
Yeah.
You know, and this is part of the journey back to getting some numbers back in place. And so, you know, we've got to put up or shut up, right? We've got to put our money where our mouth is and get involved with the government program to try and repopulate a little bit. So this is part of that undertaking, really, to support the government, also obviously to support our own enterprise. Yeah,
you mentioned there's a few firsts in all of this. How easy or challenging has it been?
Oh gee, if I look back over the years, it's been very difficult to look outside the square with government protocols and government regulations here. I think the foot and mouth disease event that went through our herd here in the last, I should say the East Java dairy herd in the last couple of years, has really made them think outside the square. So that's what has really triggered this. And as you know, there's been some talk about allowing the Girolando, the crossbred Brazil breed, coming in as well. So clearly, if they're going to let a Girolando in from Brazil, they're going to let a dairy, they're going to let a commercial cross, we call it a Holstein Jersey cross, in as well from Australia. So that's part of that, really, that whole first thing. The government's definitely moving, breaking open the boundaries a little bit. They've now allowed the importation of cattle and frozen semen from New Zealand, so we can actually import crossbred semen from New Zealand, which is obviously going to suit our needs. So Brazil and Australia on the list. So there's three countries that are open now to exporting to Indonesia.
I feel like every year, Dick, there is a story about the potential for Brazil to send cattle to Indonesia. Has that happened yet?
No, to my knowledge, nothing has happened. Yeah. There's been a lot of research from Brazilians. I think they've done a fair bit of work down in East Indonesia as well to look at what they might do with beef cattle down there as well. But until now, I don't see anything that's happened. I think the sheer economics of it, they've got to put a big vessel out of Brazil, and on that vessel will have to, the volume of the cattle would have to be slaughter or feeder steers or feeder, you know, feeder cattle to fill that boat. And there wouldn't be, you know, at best they're probably going to load a couple of hundred of these Girolandos on that vessel along with the bulk of them being feeder cattle. So, yeah, that's a pretty complex undertaking. It's a long way away. And
compared to a four-day sail out of Darwin.
Oh, yeah, in terms of feeder cattle and that sort of stuff. Yeah, for sure, for sure, for sure, yeah.
And can you give our audience just a little sense on how reliant Indonesia is on importing dairy products?
Well, about of the total milk consumed, or milk products consumed in Indonesia, about 80% is sourced from milk powder, imported milk powder. So about 20% is coming from local milk. So about 4.something million tons of milk is consumed annually. About 900-something tons is produced locally. So, yeah, they're very reliant on imported dairy products.
Yeah.
Excuse me, milk powder, particularly New Zealand and a little bit of Australia, but predominantly New Zealand.
And behind the scenes is this new free nutritious meals program to try and get school kids drinking more milk. How is all that going?
I think it's certainly been rolled out well and truly, and they're looking to ramp that up. To my knowledge, there might be a little bit of milk in some of that. I'm not sure exactly what the numbers would be on that. And we would like to think that there will be more milk involved in the future. This is a long-term program. We're looking at various options to how to get milk into those school lunches effectively and maintain quality of the product as well. So that, whilst not much has happened from our point of view, that doesn't mean to say nothing will happen. It's highly likely something will happen. So obviously that will be a bit of a game changer, because the demand would be huge if we can if we can get the supply chain where we need it to be, i.e. deliver milk really, really cheaply and at a quality that they need, that the school program needs, yeah.
So is the company looking to import more dairy cattle from Australia?
That's a pretty good question, actually. If these heifers are successful, and we believe there's no reason why they won't be, there will be a lot of interest in going down this road again, and whether we would do that will hinge on the success of this shipment and ongoing downstream demand from our point of view. So I can't say we'd do it again or not, but it wouldn't be off the radar if things went really well and demand was driving it. Then that would be, you know, we may well consider that another year, another time. Definitely other parties will be interested to try the crossbreeds. I think that's definitely going to open up the market a little bit for that breed.
That is Dick Slaney, who's the General Manager of Farms for Greenfields Indonesia, which is Indonesia's largest dairy company. I'm told all of these animals were preg tested and in calf, and they were all vaccinated for foot and mouth disease on arrival. 1,100 of them, live dairy exports to Indonesia, and this could just be the start of it. Meanwhile, live beef cattle exports to Indonesia are absolutely booming, and I'll be speaking to the NT Livestock Exporters Association about this in the second half of today's Country Hour. It is 19 to 1. A big shout out to all of the truckies who are tuning in this afternoon. I'm hoping you can stick around, because up next you'll be hearing from the Australian Trucking Association. It's calling on all states and territories to follow the lead of South Australia. SA has just tightened up the licensing requirements of overseas truck drivers. Should the rest of the nation, including the NT, follow that lead? Let's talk about it straight after a bit of Barnsley. Right across the territory on the ABC, you're tuned into the Country Hour. A reminder, if you need to duck out into the paddock, or maybe you're about to run out of reception on the highway, you can always download the podcast and listen at a time that suits you. Now, the Australian Trucking Association wants all states and territories to follow South Australia's lead in tightening up the licensing requirements of overseas truck drivers. The South Australian reforms are for the multi-combination licence, which is what you need to drive road trains and be doubles, right? Angus Verley has just had a chat to Mark Parry, who's the chair of the ATA, about the changes.
There's three truck categories for licensing. There's a heavy rigid, then the heavy combination, and then you go to MC or multi-class license, which covers B doubles and the larger road trains. What South Australia has found, and this predominantly comes from the point of safety, is that there are drivers coming with international licences into Australia and quickly moving to MC licensing, and they don't have the skill, the capability, or the experience to be driving these longer vehicle units, particularly within the Australian road conditions. So the South Australian government, through Minister Tom Coutts and Tonis, have said that if anyone is going to have an MC licence, you'll need to hold the HC for 12 months, but you'll have to undertake some competency-based assessment and driving test to ensure that you're capable. And we're very supportive of that and believe that that initiative should be rolled out across other states. That predominantly, therefore, applies to people who come from overseas. The only exclusion from that will be that if a driver comes from New Zealand and they've got an HC-HR combination, they can move through the MC quicker than other jurisdictions.
Because you mentioned that 12-month period, as I understand to this point, that 12 months may have been overseas experience recognised here and now South Australia.
That's correct. And what we're finding is people coming from overseas either don't have the capability and skill for the combinations as they exist in Australia, and certainly don't understand Australian road conditions and some of the formal and indeed informal rules of the road, which creates a safety issue. And we're very appreciative of what Minister Coutts and Tonis in South Australia have done, and we're now asking each of the other states to look at that very quickly.
So to this point, you could almost be stepping off a plane and stepping into a road train?
Yeah, look, and that has been the issue. And I think people don't want to see people driving trucks on the road when they're not doing so safely. I think sometimes some of the abuse that's hurled at international drivers in particular from other truck drivers relates more to that lack of experience and lack of skill. And we believe that removing the recognition of what's happened overseas, but for MC having to have training over here and work through the 12-month period will give a better outcome for the industry, certainly a better outcome for other road users, and we believe then will align the international drivers with Australian-based drivers.
And is it not fair both ways, both for people coming here with no experience and driving big trucks, not fair for road users and not fair on those truck drivers either?
Yeah, look, I think that is true. You come to a new country, you think you're doing the right thing, you want to start to earn some money, you get on the road, you're not familiar with the road, the conditions and the equipment, you can get into trouble very quickly in terms of accidents and incidents on the road. You're left to your own devices, and we don't think that is the right thing to do. And we're certainly advocating the South Australian position as the way to go.
And you alluded to it, Mark, but you can just peruse some of the trucking sites on social media, and there is some sickening levels of racism directed toward overseas truck drivers, and particularly Indian truck drivers.
Yeah, that's the case. And indeed, the ATA brought together a roundtable of multicultural drivers that was supported by NavMan and NHVR, the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator, as well as some of our foundational sponsors. The interesting part about that is at that multicultural roundtable, when we spoke about this potential reform, everybody in that room, including lots of drivers from India, were fully supportive of it for all the reasons that you said. It's unfair to them as a nation and a people that heritage. It's unfair to other drivers on the road who aren't driving trucks, and it's unfair to the people who come in and are almost forced, if you will, to get that license and get on that road without that experience.
And we need these overseas truck drivers, don't we?
Oh, look, we certainly do. There's a huge shortage of truck drivers across Australia. The multi-combination vehicles help productivity, which means less trucks on the road for the freight that's moved. That means that there's less emissions intensity, and we've got an ageing workforce. So if Australia's population is going to continue to grow, the freight task continues to grow, we need to get people from overseas who are and can drive, but we want to make sure that they can do so safely and are appropriately licensed after a suitable training period if they want to move to those MC licences.
And it is, of course, a state-based licensing system. You're very pleased with South Australia taking the lead. Have you had any indication from the other states and territories about whether they might follow suit?
Not at this stage. At Trucking Australia, which was held in Adelaide this year, Minister Koutsantonis was there and explained what South Australia has done. He said that he's more than happy to talk to his counterparts in the other states. And indeed, he can't see why other states wouldn't adopt this quickly, given the safety benefits, or indeed on the flip side, the hazards under the current system with people coming in, international experience being recognised, and that puts people out in the road who are not safe.
That's Mark Parry, Chair of the Australian Trucking Association, speaking to Angus Verley. Louise Bellardo is the Executive Officer of the NT Road Transport Association. Louise, do you think the Territory should be following South Australia's lead on these licensing requirements on overseas truckies? What do you think?
Well, the Northern Territory doesn't do a huge number of MC license training every year. So we do have a very individualised training program with the RTOs. So that's a plus from our perspective. But absolutely, the internationally trained, truck drivers going from an environment where they've never driven a road train to getting an MC licence and being able to drive road trains is a major challenge, and it has been a concern in the Northern Territory. So giving consideration to them obtaining an HR or an HC licence in Australia and then having to actually spend 12 months in a B double or a single doing other work other than road train work is probably sensible.
Because do we have truckies in the territory right now driving triple road trains full of cattle that have come from overseas and South Australia would now deem them not to have the necessary requirements?
Well, we would have line haul operators probably more likely to be international drivers that are coming into the Northern Territory for whom, you know, that applies, so that their experience overseas counted towards that 12 months that they had to hold a licence and then were able to get an MC licence. So what South Australia has said is that unless previous experience has been in New Zealand, they won't recognise anything, and you have to do a full 12 months in a vehicle other than a road train in order to then qualify to get to apply to get an MC licence.
Is this going to cause troubles in the short term if South Australia is the only jurisdiction doing this because truckies cross borders?
Yeah, well, yes and no. So I suspect that if you had an international truck driver who, you know, was from South, you know, Africa or from Ireland, who had a lot of other, you know, lived driving experience, they might be able to make a case, or their employer, if they're sponsored in the Northern Territory, with an employer who's brought them in specifically to do truck driving, they might be able to make a case and demonstrate through an RTO that they've got the competencies to get an MC licence. And probably in the Northern Territory, we'd prefer to be able to have that on an individual employer case-by-case basis, the opportunity to be assessed for that rather than a blanket no. What we've said previously is that the 12-month waiting period is irrelevant, and it should come down to driving hours, you know, not necessarily a logbook of driving hours, but demonstrating through your payslips or through your timesheets what you've been doing, because to go from an HC to an MC license, regardless, if you've just got it and then 12 months later you've hardly driven a truck anywhere, we don't want to see you on the road in a road train, fully loaded road train, with very limited experience around driving anything.
Yeah, and just for our audience, HC to MC, so heavy combination to multi combination.
Combination, yes, yep. And the critical issue that South Australia has highlighted, and what the Australian Trucking Association is reinforcing, is road trains drive very differently than a B double. So a combination on the East Coast is in most circumstances a B double, or, you know, an A triple, but a road train, three trailers or a quad combination in the Northern Territory or in Western Australia, they track differently. They require a whole lot of different skill sets, not just to drive the truck safely on our roads, but also to be able to manage issues as they arrive.
If something goes wrong to your road train on the Buntine Highway, yeah, it's very different to breaking down on the Hume Highway.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, and again, that's why all our road train operators, our professional road train operators, really in a different category of expertise and skill sets. And, you know, as we've emphasised, an employer is looking for a lot more than someone who comes with a licence, you know, that is all above board. It's a very different range of skills that you need to be able to operate a road train in remote Australia, not just in the Northern Territory, but across all the unsealed road network in Queensland, Northern Territory, you know, the top of South Australia and Western Australia as well.
So just a couple of final things. Is there any pressure on the current NT government to do something in this space?
Oh, we've been having conversations with the Motor Vehicle Registry for years. This particular issue in relation to international drivers is one probably of the low-hanging fruit that can be addressed more quickly than others. But when an international driver who has been, you know, driving things on the other side of the road, who doesn't know the Australian road rules, comes into Australia and gets into a road train because they're able to get their previous experience recognised, and they're able to go and get a, you know, a 3-day course and pay $2,500. Everyone's nervous about that. So what the ATA is recommending that every jurisdiction adopt in not taking on prior experience as part of that HC to MC is yeah, it's a sensible move.
And is Australia the only country in the world that has triple road trains carting cattle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Australia is the only country in the world that has road trains.
Road trains full stop. Right.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So there's a B double, you know, configuration that runs across Europe, all of Europe, and you see in the United States the singles are bigger; they're slightly longer trailers on the singles. But yeah, no, we have
we are the land of the road train, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yep.
Louise, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Matt.
Louise Bilotto from the NT Road Transport Association. On the text line this afternoon, Mark says, couldn't agree more with the Australian Trucking Association. The rest of the states and territories should follow SA's lead. Someone else here says, totally agree with truck drivers having 12 months on the HC licence before going to the MC. Someone here says it should be for HR to HC as well. Few more texts here about trucking. I'll get to them straight after the 1 o'clock news. See you soon.
Yeah, my name's Nick Ferriker from Road Trains of Australia, and I've just unloaded here at the Berrima Export Yard. And when I'm cruising along, I always tune into the Country Hour.
Matt Brand with you this afternoon. In a moment, let's take a look at the AFL and its plans to help farmers. And in a moment, I'll be having a chat to the boss of the NT Livestock Exporters Association about the NT's biggest year of cattle exports in a decade. And the NTLEA says it's all up from here. Whoa. And let's keep talking about trucking. If you've just joined us, you've missed a lot in our first half of the program today. You heard from the Australian Trucking Association, which wants all states and territories to follow South Australia's lead. And what SA has done is tightened up the licensing requirements of overseas truck drivers. We heard from Louise Bilotto from the NT Road Transport Association, who said, yep, it'd be a good thing for the NT to do. And conversations are being had. Got a text here from Charlie and Catherine on 0487 99 1057. Charlie says, Matt, I'm only doing local stuff at the moment, though with every interstate driver telling me how chaotic it is elsewhere, even with our buggered roads in the territory, it's great up here without the overseas drivers. I think all heavy licenses need to be protected, says Charlie. Yes, employers will cry, but with 60 people dying in my workplace last year, it's a dangerous place. Where is the guarantee of a safe workplace? Says Charlie in Catherine this afternoon, sharing his experience with us. 0487 99 1057. Shout out to all the truckies tuning in this afternoon. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Kaya and Perche's there today. How are you, Kaya?
I'm well, Matt. How are you?
I'm well. What are conditions like out there for truckies towing all of that essential freight around?
Yeah. So in terms of the temperatures, you know, basically seeing around 30 to 31 in the Darwin area, and in the Katherine area, seeing 30 degrees or so in Katherine. And Tennant Creek seeing about 29 today. Alice Springs about 21, and essentially, you know, basically a fine and sunny day throughout much of the territory.
What about the winds? I reckon that's what the truckies would be keen on.
Yeah. So basically not too windy. Perhaps if you're a bit further south, a bit fresher and gustier there. So the winds might be around essentially sort of, you know, that 20 kilometre per hour mark, and especially that's what we're seeing at Alice Springs, with gusts kind of even actually reaching 50 kilometres per hour, we've just seen at the Alice Springs area.
And well, sorry, what was that number again, Kyle?
About 50 kilometres per hour, so we see a 25 knot wind gust at Alice Springs Airport. And so, yeah, basically in those southern districts of the territory, there are those gustier winds occurring in that 40 to 50 kilometre per hour mark, and that's essentially that'll ease off during the day. And that's associated with just a bit of a southeast wind surge coming through. So that'll reach the Barkly essentially overnight tonight. So it could be a gusty morning in the central districts in sort of Tennant Creek, Avon Downs area tomorrow morning. It could be a bit gustier there. Yeah.
And a bit more fog around this morning for parts of the top end, hey?
Yeah, that's right. We did see some quite extensive areas of fog or mist in the Carpentaria. So we saw some mist at Borroloola sort of airport area and near the MacArthur of the mine. And basically, we did see quite a bit of fog over the Eastern Territory and also in the western top end there. So we did see some, I saw some sort of photo reports of fog around Blackmore area, just in the outer Darwin area there. And we do have that chance of fog in eastern and western parts of the top end again tomorrow and on Thursday morning.
Okay, there's no wind warnings out at the moment for coastal waters. How long are you expecting that to last?
Essentially, that should last for the whole week, so we don't really expect any strong wind surge. Even this one currently, we're not expecting that to reach the top end. So for much of the forecast outlook, not expecting strong winds on the coastal waters there. Essentially, east to southeasterly winds about 10 to 15 knots across broadly across the top end waters there.
Anything else we should be aware of this afternoon?
No, I guess that's covered off the wind change with that surge coming through today.
Yep, and we're on Catherine Weather Watch this week, Kai, because the show's on this Friday and Saturday. So at the moment, Friday, tracking for a minimum of 11 degrees there in the morning at the showgrounds, reaching a top of 31. Bit cooler on Saturday, 9 degrees start to the day, and heating up again to 31 degrees in K-Town. Which
Very
is
good.
Not too bad, is it? Not too bad.
Yeah.
All right, Kaya. Have a lovely afternoon, mate.
You too, mate.
In a world on edge, where tensions flare, we'll take you across the globe to the heart of the matter.
We're just journalists covering this story.
Foreign Correspondent returns tonight at 8 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
It is 11 past 1 and you are tuned into the Country Hour. The 2024-25 financial year was a big one for live cattle exports out of the Darwin port. In fact, it was the biggest year in about a decade. The NT Livestock Exporters Association has released a few stats this afternoon and says this is an industry that continues to grow. We're joined this afternoon by the Chief Executive of the NTLEA, Patrick Moran. How are you, Pat?
Yeah, good, Matt. How are you?
I am well. These are big numbers. So about 440,000 head of cattle exported last financial year, up nearly 60% on the previous year. What's your take on what's behind that very significant jump?
Yep, that's right. The 440,000 is about 40,000 more than the previous decade high, which was back way back in 2015-16, and it's about 60% higher than last year. Now, one of the reasons for that would be import quotas in Indonesia, which, as your listeners would know, the Indonesian government has decided to drop the number quotas on Australian cattle. So it seems that we won't have to encounter that problem again. So I think there's a lot of factors that are feeding into the higher numbers, but Indonesian demand is definitely one of the primary ones.
How are the other markets going, like Vietnam and the Philippines?
Yeah, they out of Darwin Port, they sort of pale in comparison. However, Philippines is looking to be higher in the financial year as well, although I don't have the breakdown of that quite yet. Vietnam is also looking higher for this year. So, for instance, in May alone, we did 3,500 head to Philippines and 4,500 head to Vietnam. So if that pace continues, they'll also be breaking records this year.
They're important markets, but it sounds like Indonesia well and truly the main game. How are the next few months shaping up for that trade, do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of optimism, and not only that, on the ground, there's a lot of boats going out. So I think I heard people saying with all the exporters, there was about 8 boats in 10 days out of Darwin Port just in the last week or so. So everyone's flat out at the moment, which is good.
We were talking to Dick Slaney at the start of today's show. He was on to tell us about Indonesia importing dairy cattle and the demand that's potentially being created by the government's free nutritious meals program. It's very designed to get more milk and protein to school children. Are you seeing that flow into the live beef cattle trade at all?
We are, and there's high demand for productive heifers as well out of Indonesia, but it's just an overall broad-based demand for everything, basically.
Yeah. Right. But we are starting to see a few more breeder cattle going out of the territory in Indonesia.
Yep, there seems to be a renewed focus on that, and I think everyone's happy to accommodate that. Yep.
Right. Busy, busy times. Thanks for your time this afternoon on the Country Hour. I appreciate it.
Nope, thanks. Yep, very optimistic that this will continue. So great to talk to you.
That's Patrick Moran, who's the Chief Executive of the NT Livestock Exporters Association. It is 1:15. Up next on the Country Hour, let's talk about the AFL and how it's planning to help farmers.
Grab the August issue of Gardening Australia for expert tips on growing kangaroo paw, bare-rooted ornamentals, eggplant and potted citrus. Plus, identify weedy plants, learn about potting mix and visit an urban food forest.
The text number at the Country Hour is 0487 991057, and we love weather updates on the Country Hour. Always have. Always have. Got a text here from Matt out at Nooka this afternoon. He says, heavy fog for the Nooka and Roper regions this morning. Out there in the Roper River, what's the fishing like out there at the moment, Matt? Has it gone a bit quiet on the Barramundi front? That's the little goss and the intel we need from out your way. Appreciate you getting in touch though. 0487 991057. I wish I had up there Gazali on the machine here to play for you. I couldn't find it. But I do want to talk about AFL with you, because the AFL is looking to help out farmers in South Australia at the moment who, as you probably are aware, are battling through one of the worst droughts in history. I'm joined in the studio by Fiona Broom. How's the AFL going to kick a few goals for farmers?
Oh, good pun there, Matt.
Thank you.
Well, you know, as you know, right across the country, there's a really strong connection between footy of all codes and agriculture. There's just loads of players who come up through country footy, come off the farms, come into play. Certainly the case in South Australia. So this weekend, the AFL is holding a dedicated drought support match. So the game between the Adelaide Crows and the Gold Coast Suns on Sunday, it's going to focus on drought. The idea is just to bring some national awareness to what producers have been going through. There's already been a $100,000 donation from the SA government to the Rural Business Relief Fund. There's also going to be donations from a supermarket for every goal kicked by the Crows during the match.
Oh, rightio.
Yeah.
Well, the Crows are going pretty well at the moment, so with any luck,
yeah, it should be a bit of money.
The supermarket will be forking out.
Kicking into that fund, if I can throw in a pun myself.
Nice.
So they're looking at you know, producers across all regions. It's all across livestock, dairy, cropping, that sort of thing. John Gladigo from Grain Producers South Australia has a few more details here about what's going on.
We know it's a really tough time at the moment, right through rural SA with the drought, and it's just absolutely relentless. So this, I guess, is just an opportunity that GBSA came up with and worked together with the state government to put on a drought support match with the AFL, and basically there's free tickets available to farmers right across the state through Grain Producers SA, Livestock SA, and through SADA, and farmers will have received emails about how to receive those tickets. There's obviously lots of Crows players as well that have connections to farms, farmers and country areas across South Australia, and so they've been very supportive and wanting to, I guess, help create a connection, and so that farmers can be seen and can be valued, and for there to be understanding of what this devastating drought's been all about.
That's John Gladigo from Grain Producers SA. So he was talking about the connections between footy and farming. Nick Murray from the Adelaide Crows grew up in farming country out at Henty in New South Wales, home of the Henty Field Days. Mm-hmm. He actually still runs a sheep property in Adelaide, southeast of Adelaide at Hartley. So as part of this drought awareness round at the weekend, Murray and some other players and club staff, they're putting on some footy clinics for farm kids in a couple of regions in SA. They've also done up a bit of a social vid with Nick Murray there, the South Australia Premier Peter Malinauskas, and Claire Scriven, who's the Minister for Primary Industries.
Seeing a lot of social stuff around how much farmers and these rural communities in SA are struggling. So if we can just bring a few smiles to some people's faces, I think we've done our part.
Tragically, South Australia is currently enduring some of the driest conditions that we've ever known in our history. For as long as records have been kept, we have not seen dry conditions such as these. And that is having a real-world impact on so many of our great farmers and primary producers throughout the state.
Obviously, growing up in those small community towns, we went through a few droughts growing up, and Monday to Friday, a lot of these farmers are really struggling, you know, whether it be with rain or sheep or whatever, livestock, footy or sport as a whole in these regional communities is a massive influence. Obviously getting out there on a sad day and having those 2 or 3 hours where they don't have to think about farming is, really good.
We really appreciate the Crows' support with this. The drought support match means that some farmers will be able to get off a farm for a while, turn off, think about something else, which is really, really important, but also be able to see that raising funds shows that South Australians do know the challenges that they're going through and what to support them, help them, and that they know they're not alone.
So that was the South Australia Minister for Primary Industries ending that video there. You heard from the Premier as well as Nick Murray, who is a defender, I think, for the Adelaide Crows.
Let's hope they raise heaps of money.
Yeah, so there's going to be money kicked in for every goal that the Crows kick at the weekend as part of this drought support match. Crows will go up against the Gold Coast Suns on Sunday. Let's see how it goes.
Beauty, thank you very much. It's 20 past one on the Country Hour. Up next, you'll meet some of the young guns of Australia's red meat industry who have been going up against the world's best in meat judging. That's next. Across the territory on ABC Radio, this is The Country Hour. The next generation of red meat industry leaders have been putting their skills to the test at the Intercollegiate Meat Judging National Conference. Agriculture students from across this nation, plus the United States and Japan, were involved in this comp held at Charles Sturt University. Meat scientist and ICMJ president Peter McGilchrist says the event's about more than carcass judging.
So this conference is all about bringing undergraduate students that are studying ag degrees or veterinary degrees in to have a look at what happens in the processing space of meat in Australia, and just to identify the range of careers that are in the food industry in turning an animal into a very nutritious food. the careers across that supply chain are all the way from genetics on farm, genomics, you know, how to breed the animals better, how to grow them better, all the way through to processing. There's a lot of science that goes actually into your steak that ends up into your plate. So how do we get the right conditions pre and post processing? And then all the way through to how do we measure those things more accurately? Because a lot of things that drive profit, like yield and quality, is what the students will be assessing. So yield is the quantity of meat, and quality is how good is that meat? So how much have we got to sell and how yummy is it?
For the students, the meat judging is a major part of the ICMJ conference. Taylor Colvin has been training since August last year to earn her place on the US team. And while winning matters, she says the connections she's making are also important.
I mean, we definitely are here to compete, and we want to win for sure, but we also are here to make connections and meet people and just learn about Australia and the meat industry here.
Dr. Peter McGilchrist says industry networking is central to the ICMJ's national conference.
It's really important because in a lot of processes are the major employers in regional towns. Really, really important for us to attract young, bright minds into those companies and then retain them as well. So our whole mission is to inspire and develop these young individuals to put us at the forefront of being the best producers of red meat in the world.
Among the Australian cohort is Ben Graham from Narandra in the New South Wales Riverina. Ben is now in his third year studying agriculture at CSU. Ben says the local students have the home ground advantage, being able to access processing plants at Gundagai Lamb and Tees in Wagga Wagga.
So we have trainings through the week here at CSU, and being so close to the Tees Abattoir here in Wagga and also Gundagai Lamb, we've had a lot of opportunity, which probably some other unis haven't, to actually go through the processing plants. And yeah, so we've been able to learn, you know, not just with pitches, but we've walked through the whole supply chain and been able to learn that way.
As for the future, Ben's not planning on heading into meat processing, but says the conference still gives him an edge, especially in the livestock supply chain.
I'm probably less interested in the processing part and more in the supply, so breeding cattle and feedlotting. And so even though it's a meat judging competition, there's plenty of pastoral companies and feedlotting companies here for those like me that are interested in that sort of area to talk to.
That is Ben Graham speaking to Cara Jeffrey at the Intercollegiate Meat Judging National Conference. The best of the best of the young guns going head-to-head there. I like the carcass comps, but personally, if I have to go and do one of these things, I prefer the plate product. Please, Matt, could you judge all these delicious Wagyu steaks? That's kind of where I'm angling for. Let's go to the sale yards now. With all the latest prices out of Roma, here's David Friend.
Interim report, continued dry conditions. Roma agency out of 9,780 head, including over 2,500 cows. All the regular processor fed on background is present. A quality yarding pen with heavy feeders, weaners and bullocks. At the time of this interim report, the market firmed to slightly stronger. Yearly steer 200 to 200 kilos, with majority selling from 360 cents to 452 cents a kilo. Yearly steer 280 to 330 kilos, making to 434 cents a kilo. Yearly steer 330 to 400 kilos, up almost 43 cents to make to 412 cents to feed and 444 cents to restockers. Yearling steers over 400 to 480 kilos sold from 395 to 412 to average 410 cents a kilo. Growing steers 500 to 600 kilos to 358 to average 356 cents a kilo. And growing steers over 600 kilos to 356 cents to processors. This has been David Fenn from the National Livestock Reporting Service at Roma.
Thank you for that, David. And in the live export trade, as you heard a moment ago, the Darwin Port exported about 440,000 head of cattle in the last financial year, which was up nearly 60% on the previous financial year, and it makes the 2024-25 financial year the biggest year for cattle exports out of Darwin in about a decade. So that's a big outcome there for the industry, and there's still lots of boats going out. It's a very, very busy time. Big thanks to someone who has sent us a text just informing us this afternoon that Albatross Street in Winelli is still closed. This person says a truck hit a power line. Everyone's still waiting for power and water to clear that road. And yes, according to the NT's incident map, that accident occurred a bit after 8 o'clock this morning, so they're still trying to fix that up. Thanks to everyone who got involved in the Country Hour this afternoon. Let's do it all again tomorrow. Keep it rural.